So 2 weeks back, where did we stop?
Chapter 12? First Paul. Very good. Just a test to see whether you all were listening. Okay, so what we have covered these 4 verses. This chapter 12 is called Bhakti Yoga. And from what we discussed about Bhakti, that Bhakti is not one, just one sadhana. Bhakti means devotion. It is not one type of sadhana. In chapter 12, Krishna will explain that it is 5 levels of sadhana. And the highest level of bhakti is called Jnana Yoga. Because even when we study, Jnana Yoga is study of the scriptures. Even when we study the scriptures, there must be devotion for the Lord. Then only Jnana becomes Jnana Yoga. So bhakti must be at 5 levels, and the highest level is Jnana Yoga, which he will explain later in chapter 12. And this chapter starts with a question from Arjuna in verse 1, where we saw that Arjuna asked between 2 types of devotees. One devotee who worships God in a form, that is Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam. Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam, there is one type of devotee who worships God with a form. And Arjuna wanted to know, compared with this devotee, there is another devotee who worships God as the formless. Nirguna Ishvara Dhyanam. Saguna versus Nirguna. What Arjuna wanted to know is, what is the difference between these 2 devotees? Or rather, which is the more superior devotee? That is the question that Arjuna asks, and often we also want to know, is worship of form more superior or worship of formless more superior? So in verse number 2, Krishna said, he identified, first of all, he gave a description of the devotee who worships him in form. And what did he say about this devotee? He says, such a devotee, fixing their minds on me, meaning the God with form. But what type of devotee? Nitya Yukta Upasate. Not a part-time devotee. Not one who just goes to temple every Sunday or once a month. He is not talking about that kind of devotee. Nitya Yukta Upasate. With steadfast devotion. With dedicated, committed devotion to God. That means daily worship of God. Such a type of devotee he identifies as a Saguna Ishvara worshipper. And the second quality that devotee must possess is Shraddhaya, supreme faith. He must have extreme faith in what he is worshipping. So it is not a half-hearted worship. It is worship with steadfastness. It is worship with supreme faith. And what did Krishna say about this devotee who worships God with a form? He says, I consider the most perfect devotee. So that is the devotee who worships God with form. What about the devotee who worships the formless God? In verses 3, first he identified, what do you mean by formless? So he said that the formless God is called Aksharam. Aksharam means what? Aksharam means that which is, what is Aksharam? Imperishable. So the formless God has got to be imperishable. Why? Why has the formless God got to be imperishable? Anything with form can perish. Anything with form can come, can go. Like we saw, Rama came, Rama went. Krishna came, Krishna went. So anything that has got form is one day subject to perish. So the highest form of God is that which is called Aksharam, which is the absolute, which is imperishable. And then he gave 7 other qualities that we discuss. Avyaktam. Avyaktam means it is unmanifest. And what do you mean when you say unmanifest? how do you define something unmanifest? Something which our senses cannot experience. Your eyes cannot see, your ears cannot hear, your nose cannot smell. So that is what is called unmanifest, beyond our perception of the senses. Then he also said it is achintyam, incomprehensible. You cannot even, your mind cannot even think. If your senses cannot experience, how can your mind even think what is that form of Lord? So there's nothing to describe such a form of Lord. It is beyond sense manifestation. He also said it is sarvatragam, it is all pervading. So you can see the difference between a manifest God and an unmanifest God. A manifest God, we cannot say all pervading, right? Because we go to temple, we worship that God, he can only be in one place. But the unmanifest God is called sarvatragam, is all pervading. Just like example given is what? Compared to space. Space is all pervading, right? So these were the descriptions that we have discussed. Achalam, unmoving, and all the other descriptions he gave in verse number 3. Then in verse number 4, what did he say about this devotee who worships the formless God? He said such a devotee must have certain qualities also. Not only must he be worshipping the formless, but he must have certain qualities. What are those qualities? In verse 4 he said, Indriya Gramam Samniyamya. Samniyamya means control, discipline over what? Gramam means group. Group of what? Indriyas, all the sense organs. He must have complete discipline over his organs, the eyes, the ears, the nose, etc. So such a devotee must have a mastery over all the sense organs. And why must he have a mastery? Because to worship something which is unmanifest, something so subtle, you must have a mastery over your mind. And therefore, it is also important to have a mastery over your senses. Because any undisciplined senses, what is the danger? What is the danger of undisciplined senses? It can drag your mind away, your attention of your mind away. Right? And we all know, as we are sitting in this class, as we are listening, if there is a sound, suddenly the ears get distracted. What happens? Your mind also gets distracted also. So such a person must have absolute control over the senses. And the other quality he gave was samabuddhaya. Samabuddhaya means even-minded. Even-minded means he or she does not have strong raga dvesha. Most of us lead our lives by likes and dislikes. But one who is samabuddhaya means the intellect controls the mind. So there is no fluctuation. We do not lead the mind, we do not lead our lives according to our likes and dislikes. We lead to according to what is right and what is wrong. So we do not let likes and dislikes dictate our life. We lead a life according to what is right and what is wrong. That is samabuddhaya. And also he talked about sarva bhuta hite rataha. Rataha means engaged in what? Hite. Hite means the welfare. Welfare of what? Sarva bhuta, all the beings. Now, why is a devotee of Lord who worships the Lord in unmanifest form is able to be engaged in the welfare of all beings? Sorry? He sees the Lord in everyone. So he sees the Lord all pervading everywhere. Because he has reached the point of worshipping the unmanifest God. That means he can realize and recognize that there is divinity everywhere. So he does not distinguish between who I like, who I dislike. Everybody is the same to him. So sarva bhuta hite rataha. So such is the nature of a devotee who worships Lord in the unmanifest form. Now, what did he say about the devotee who worships Lord in manifest? In verse number 2, what did he say about such a devotee? He is the most perfect devotee, right? He is the most perfect. Now, what does he say about the devotee who worships him in unmanifest form? He says, such a devotee, te mam eva prapnuvanti. Prapnuvanti means they will attain me, meaning they will attain moksha. So now you can see the difference between the worship of the manifest and worship of the unmanifest. The one who worships God as manifest, Lord says he is my most perfect devotee. But will he get moksha? No. But the one who worships Lord as the unmanifest, will he get moksha? Yes. So now obviously that doubt will come in our mind. Then why should I worship the God with form? Why don't I go to the higher state and learn how to worship God without form? So now in verse number 5, Krishna will give us the answer to that. Okay? Why should we not avoid Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam? Why must we all go through Saguna Ishvara Dhyanam? That is the question. Now, what does he say about Nirguna Dhyanam? So he says in verse 5, Nirguna Dhyanam. When we say Nirguna Dhyanam, we are talking about the highest form of worship, which means we must have knowledge. It is Jnana Yoga. And Jnana Yoga consists of three steps we have seen. What are the three steps? Shravanam, first you listen to the scriptures, the knowledge. Mananam, you do reflection to remove all your doubts and ignorance. Then you come to Nididhyasanam, which is called practice, which includes meditation. Right? So that path now Krishna is talking about, Nirguna Dhyanam, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. He says it is extremely difficult. It is not an easy path. It is an extremely difficult path. And he uses the word here, if you look at verse 5, Klesho. Klesho means it is a struggle. When you want to go on the Jnana Yoga path, it is an extreme struggle. Not only is it klesha, it is adhikataras. Adhikataras means it is a great struggle. Meaning there are many difficulties, there are many obstacles. For who are the obstacles? Not for everybody. So for who is this Nirguna Dhyanam or Jnana Yoga, for who does it become an obstacle? He says, for those whose, look at the second line, you see the word Chetasa. Chetasa means whose mind. Chetasa means mind. Whose minds are asakta. You see, there is avyakta, asakta, chetasam. There are three words there. Avyakta, asakta, chetasam. So chetasam means mind. One whose mind is asakta. Asakta means who is committed. Committed to what? Avyakta, who is committed to unmanifest Ishvara. So let's say somebody decides, I don't want to worship God with form. I want to go straight away to unmanifest God. But Krishna says, it is very, very difficult. If you bypass that step, if you jump straight away to unmanifest, you are asking for trouble. It is a very difficult task. Now, in the Katha Upanishad, this path of Jnana Yoga is compared to, there is a word there, is called Shurasya Dara Nishita Durajaya. It means it is like walking on a razor's edge. You know razor, razor blade? Assuming you try to walk on the edge of the razor, what is the danger? You can hurt yourself. Number two, you can also fall off because it is so fine, the path is so fine. So the path of Jnana Yoga in the Upanishads is called like walking on a razor's edge, because it is extremely difficult and you can end up hurting yourself. Now, it is not that the scriptures are trying to discourage us. So why do they tell us that it's a difficult path? Why do they tell us it's such a difficult path? It's not that they are trying to discourage us. That means you should be mentally prepared before you go on to this path. You should learn how to prepare yourself and then go on this path of Jnana Yoga. So they are trying to alert us that you must have a disciplined mind, you must have a very focused mind, you can go to Jnana Yoga, but you must prepare yourself. So here Krishna says, therefore this path of Jnana Yoga or worship of the unmanifest is very, very difficult. And he says here, avyakta hi gatir dukhav. The gati, the word gati means the goal. The goal of avyakta, the goal of the formless, to reach the formless nirguna Brahman is dukham. What is dukham? It's painful. Why is it painful? Because there are many obstacles. We will discuss later what are the obstacles and how to overcome these obstacles. So there are many obstacles, that's why it's called dukham. And dukham for who? Now that word is very important for us to understand here. Dukham for who? Dukham for deha vadbi. This word deha means body. Deha vadbi means embodied ones. That means what? It is difficult if you have a body. That is what embodied one means, right? So that means what does it tell us? All of you have a body. That means it is difficult until you give up your body. Attachment to the body. That is what he's saying. Because we have so much of attachment to this body, as long as you have a very strong attachment to this body, the path of Nirguna Ishvara is very, very difficult. So he says, avapyate, for the embodied ones to reach, avapyate means to reach, it is a very difficult process. So what does it mean? It means, first of all, how do you prepare yourself? You have to give up attachment to your body. Deha abhimana. Abhimana means the pride that we have in this body. So much of strong attachment we have to this physical body. And understand, once we have attachment to this physical body, comes the second problem. What is the second problem? When I take so much pride in who I am, what I've achieved, then what is the next problem? What is the next problem? That is actually called ego. Ahamkara means the strong attachment to body is called ahamkara. That is ego. But this body is also attached to so many other things, isn't it? My relatives, my spouse, my children, my possessions, my title, my name, my fame. So when you have so much attachment to the body, automatically you have attachment to everything else also. That means you can see it is quite a big problem now, because I take so much pride. So I'm obsessed. When you have so much of pride with this body, you also have so much of problem, because this body is attached to so many other things, right? So I'm obsessed with everything. So when you're attached to the body, what do you call such a person? When you're attached so much to the body, what do you call such a person? Busybody, isn't it? Why? Because all the time you are only interested in me, 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 and what is my possession, my family, my home, my house, my money. All the time only you are busy in what? Three things. Food, shelter and clothing. Right? You are running around how to take care of this body and take care of everything else that you are attached to. Now, for such a person whose mind is so gross, how can that mind turn itself to the very subtle knowledge of Nirguna Brahman? That is what Krishna is trying to say. It is not that we should not go to Nirguna Brahman, we should all go there. But first of all, you have to learn to be detached from this body and from all the other attachments also. So, Deha Vatvir, for those people who have strong attachment to the body, then this path of Jnana Yoga is very difficult. So, how should we prepare ourselves? That is what he is going to tell us in the next few verses. Okay. Now, if you tell a spiritual seeker that Jnana Yoga is very difficult, if you tell anybody who is a spiritual seeker, who is seeking moksha, and you tell him that Jnana Yoga is very, very difficult, so what will that person do? What will that person do? You say you are wasting time going for Gita class. Very difficult path you have chosen. So, what will that person do? Not you, I am talking about generally. You all are coming for class, it's okay. But if you tell somebody, don't waste your time in Vedanta, Gita class, all, it's a very difficult path to go to Jnana Yoga. So, what will that person do? Enjoy life. So many other yogas are there, isn't it? Kundalini yoga there, Hatha yoga there, this yoga, that yoga, flying yoga, all kinds of yoga there. So what will that person do? Try something else, try something easier, isn't it? But we must understand that, and some people say, even never mind, let's take to worship of God. I don't have to go to Jnana Yoga. Let me go to temple and worship and cry in front of God. I will attain moksha. Right? And at crying, all of us are very, we all are experts at crying. So, you may try very alternative methods. You will try this, you will try that, try all different types of spiritual practices. But we must understand one thing. The Upanishads are very clear on this topic of Jnana Yoga. They very clearly mention that there is no other path to moksha except Jnana Yoga. So you can try all the different types of yogas, but ultimately you have to come to Jnana Yoga to attain moksha. So they say na anya pantha, that means there is no other path but Jnana Yoga to attain moksha. So everybody has got to come to this Jnana Yoga. Now, why have you got to come to Jnana Yoga? Why is Jnana Yoga so important? Why can't you try all other types of yogas? Go and worship Lord, do multiple havans, every day do havan, give lot of charity, dhanam. All those are also good spiritual practices. So why is Jnana Yoga considered to be the most superior? What? Freedom from bondage. What else? Yeah, why? Why is Jnana Yoga? It what? Exactly. All other actions that you do, whatever you do, how much dhanam you do, how much prayers you do, how much rituals you do, it cannot remove the ignorance and the doubts you have. All the ignorance and the doubts you have can only be removed in one way, which is by applying knowledge. So until your doubts and ignorances are not removed, no matter how many rituals, prayers you do, how much dhanam you do, how many temples you visit, your ignorance and doubts are not removed. And until your doubts and ignorance are not removed, how are you going to attain moksha? So that's why the scriptures say you have to come to jnana. And if you recall that verse in chapter 4 verse 33, if you go back to verse chapter 4 verse 33, that is page 94, the same thing Krishna said there also. Chapter 4 verse 33, page 94, the last two lines in Sanskrit, sarva karma akhilam partha jnani parisamapyate. Sarva karma, all the actions that you do, that means rituals, prayers, dhanam, everything that you do, akhilam, without exception, there is no exception. Whatever actions you do, akhilam, without exception, parisamapyate, culminate in what? Knowledge. So all the yogas that you are practicing are good because they help you to purify the mind and bring you to the path of knowledge. But all these actions that you do will not lead you directly to moksha, they will lead you to jnana yoga. So ultimately you have to come to jnana yoga. So if other parts were lead to moksha, we must ask ourselves one question. Another way to understand why jnana yoga is so important. If any other path could lead to moksha, do you think Krishna would have wasted time with Arjuna, 700 verses, question and answer, to give him what? Why did he engage him in question and answer? To remove his doubts, to remove his ignorance, by giving him knowledge and ultimately to lead him to moksha. If there was any other way, if by meditation, if by doing rituals, by prayers, then Krishna would have told Arjuna, okay, now sit down and recite chapter 12 now. You can get moksha. But he led him through a series of question and answers. And ultimately in chapter 18, he asked Arjuna only one question. Have all your doubts been removed? That's the only question Krishna asked him. Have all your doubts been removed? Arjuna said, yes, I am now ready to follow your teachings. So that means even Krishna gave a lot of importance to jnana yoga also. And jnana yoga, that's why, is the fifth and final step in bhakti. So now we will see what are the other steps now. Krishna will go step by step and start with one level by one level, and then he'll tell us, if we can't practice level 5, then what we should do? Go to level 4. If you can't practice level 4, level 3. You can't practice level 3, 2. You can't practice 2, 1. You can't practice 1, come back again, not a bird. You still have another chance, don't worry. So, first of all, he starts with the level number 5 here. What is the highest level now? In verse number 6. So, he says now in verse number 6. He says, the word yetu means he is talking about some other type of seekers. A type of seeker who is on the fourth level. Because now he already explained to us the fifth level. In verses 3 and 4, he told us about that fifth level which is called jnana yoga. So he is saying, if you can't come to that level, you can start with level 4. Now what is level 4? Level 4 is sanyasa sarvani karmani mai. Sanyasa means here dedicate. You start first, if you cannot come to path of knowledge, you find it difficult, start with level 4. What is level 4? Sanyasa, dedicate what? Sarvani, all karmani actions, mai, to me, to the Lord. Dedicate all your actions to the feet of the Lord. Now, what does it mean by dedicate all your actions to the feet of the Lord? First question is, where is the feet of the Lord? Where are the feet of the Lord? Everywhere, isn't it? Because He's all pervading. So, it means that all the actions that you are doing, understand first that you are not doing for yourself. You are doing all the actions for the sake of the Lord. Even looking after your family, the understanding must be, who does the family belong to? My family also belongs to the Lord. I am looking after the Lord's family. This body has been gifted to me by the Lord. I am to use this body as an instrument to serve the Lord. So that attitude must come in us. That is the fourth level of bhakti yoga. So, Lord is the creator of the law of karma. Now, when we talk about actions, we perform actions at two levels. One, we are a karta, we are a doer of all actions. As a doer of all actions, we also have a second role. That is what? You are the receiver of all the results of your action. So you are a bhokta. So we play two roles. We are a karta, we are a bhokta. Whatever actions you do, you also receive the results. So when Lord says, surrender all your actions to me, that means as a karta, what must be my attitude? As a doer, what must be my attitude? What must be my attitude? I am an instrument in the hands of the Lord. I must never consider myself as a doer. I consider that everything I am doing, I am an instrument in the hands of the Lord. As a receiver of all the results, what should be my attitude? Ishvara Prasadam. I accept everything as coming from the Lord. Due to my own karmas, the Lord will allocate favorable or unfavorable results to me. So, because it is coming from the Lord, I accept it as prasadam. So, that is what it means by sannyasa sarvani karmani mayi. Dedicate all your actions to me as a karta and as a bhokta. Then he says, mat paraha, the second quality, very important. Mat paraha means be totally devoted to me. In all your actions, be totally devoted to me. Now, what does it mean, be totally devoted to the Lord? What do you mean by having total devotion to the Lord? What does matparaha mean? Having total devotion to the Lord. Now, what does it mean? What do you mean by it? So, what does it ultimately mean? Constantly thinking of Him. That means our primary goal in life, through all my actions, I am doing all my actions, my primary goal is to attain God. Whereas all other people do actions is for what? For more and more worldly goals. But I understand all the actions I am doing, my ultimate goal is to attain God. Now it does not mean that you won't get some worldly benefits. Some benefits will come, but that is not your primary goal. Your primary goal is to attain God. So, Matpara, he is saying, always keep me in your mind. Do not lose sight of me. Keep me as your primary goal in life. And then he says, Ananyena Yogena. Ananyena Yogena means single-minded concentration. Why? Because on this path of trying to reach God, even when you dedicate all your actions to God, there will be many distractions. There will be many attractions of the world. Many things will take your mind away. So you have to have single-pointed concentration on the Lord. That is what is called ananyena yogena. So all your senses, all your mind, bring it and discipline it in a single-minded concentration on the God, on Lord. So that is why it's so important for us to keep our senses and our mind under control. Continuously, the scriptures will tell us, keep your senses under control, keep your mind under your control. And therefore, that's why we are given all the yogas. Karma yoga, we do seva, we engage ourselves in service of others. So all the while, we are keeping our mind on God. Upasana yoga, we do prayers and rituals to fix our mind on God. Jnana yoga, we do study of the scriptures to fix our mind on the Lord. We chant mantras for what purpose? Fix our mind on the Lord. So, do all the sadhanas to keep your senses and your mind constantly fixed on the Lord. And thus he says, Mam dhyayanta upasate. Such a devotee, upasate means worship. So you see now the word bhakta, we take bhakti as worship, but actually in the Gita, the word worship has now been replaced with the word upasana or upasate. And upasana, explained to you, comes from two words. Upa means what? Near. Asana means to sit. So to bring your mind to sit near God, that is what is called worship. Because you can be in a temple, it does not mean bring your physical body near God. You can be in the temple praying to God, but your mind can be somewhere else. So upasana means to bring your mind to sit near God. That is what we call worship. So he says, in that way, which is described in verse number 6, by dedicating all your actions to Lord, keeping Lord as your goal in life, constantly fixing your mind on the Lord through various sadhana, in such a way, a devotee upasate worships me, Mam, the Lord. Dhyayanta means to constantly fixes his mind on me. So that is one type of devotee. Who is? So that is what he is talking about, the level number 4. Okay? So now he also in verse number 7, he continues to describe this devotee at level number 4. He says, what does he do for such devotees? Okay? So verse number 6 and 7, he speaks about that devotee who is on level number 4. So what will Lord do for such a devotee who dedicates all his actions to him, who keeps God as his primary goal in life? Now Krishna is saying, what will I do for such a devotee? So he says, Chetasa, again if you look at the last line of verse number 7, you see the word Ave Sita Chetasam. So Chetasam means again mind. Ave Sita means absorbed, whose mind is totally absorbed in me, in the Lord. Meaning what? When Lord says such a devotee's mind is totally absorbed in me, what does it tell you about this devotee? What do you mean when you say my mind is totally absorbed in the Lord? What does it tell you about such a devotee? Faith is there, yes. But what does it tell you about such a devotee? He says mind is absorbed in the Lord. What does it mean? He is not interested in materialistic goals. That's what you mean when you say my mind is now absorbed and fixed in God. Means I am not interested in materialistic goals. Whether I get more money, whether I get more title, more fame, that is not what I am interested in. Such a devotee at level number 4 is talking about, whose mind is totally absorbed in me. So what do I do for such devotees? Tesham. Tesham means for such kind of devotees. Which type of devotee? The one who is at level number 4. What do I do? Look at the first line. Tesham samu sam udharta. There are three words there actually. Sam udharta. Sam Uddharta means I rescue them. If they dedicate all their actions to me, keep me as their goal in life, keep their minds fixed on me, I rescue them. Aham, I will rescue them. So the word Uddharta means lift them up actually. Uddharta. Sam, when the word Sam is added, it means I will quickly lift them up. I will quickly rescue them. Okay. Now, rescue them from what? Mrityu samsara sagara. Sagara means ocean. Mrityu means death. Samsara means this world. This world is compared to a ocean of death. Now, it's very interesting why the ocean is compared to the world. You see the similarities. How come the ocean is always called, you know, the ocean of, we call this world as samsara, samsara sagara. It is an ocean. The world is like an ocean. Can you see the similarity between the ocean and this world? What is the similarity? Ocean is not always calm, okay? World is not always calm, okay? What else? ocean is vast, world is vast, okay, what else? Difficult to cross, okay, what else?
The waves go back in the ocean.
Now, look at the allegory of the ocean. The waves, the water evaporates from the ocean, right? Goes into the rivers and all that. Then it comes back again into the ocean. So what is life on earth? People come, they are born, they die, they go to the other lokas, they come back again. So that's why it's called samsara sagara. You continuously keep on rotating in this world. You can never escape. You can escape, of course, but this is generally what happens to most of people. We come in, we take birth, we live our life, we die, we go to the different lokas, we come back again to earth. What is the ocean? The waters dry up, they go into the rivers, they come back again into the ocean. It is a continuous cycle. That's why the ocean is always compared to the world, which is a what we call samsara sagara, mrityu. It is an ocean of death. The world is a place of death. So, we can never reach our destination. We can reach if we know the right formula, but we are always in constant transit. And you remember that verse in chapter 9, right? That after we die, we go up to the lokas, we enjoy all the good karmas, and when all the good karmas are exhausted, we come back again to earth again. Continuous cycle. So, fear of death now. Now, here is talking about mrityu, death. Krishna says, I rescue you from the death. Now, fear of death can only be removed in two ways. What are the two ways that you can remove this fear of death? One is knowledge. What type of knowledge? What type of knowledge? Until you understand Aham Atma Asmi, I am that immortal soul. Once you accept you are the immortal soul, can you be ever subject to birth and death? That is the only way we can overcome our fear of birth and death. If we, as long as we accept ourselves as this body, there is always fear of death. But when I understand I am not this body, I am the immortal soul. Immortal means what? That which can never die. Once I accept that, my fear of death automatically goes away. So, one way of escaping the fear of death is by knowledge, by understanding that I am the immortal soul. The second is when we have total faith in the Lord and we surrender our life in the hands of the Lord, our fear of death also goes away. We are ready to face any circumstances, any situation in life. So now when Krishna says, I rescue you from the ocean of death, meaning what? For such kind of devotees, it is Krishna's responsibility to either bring you on the path of worship or to bring you on the path of knowledge. So that is how he rescues you. Not that he'll come down from heaven and pick you up and take you to heaven. He rescues you by giving you the knowledge. That means what? From level 4, you will come to level 5. He will make it easy for you to come to level 5. So how are you going to start? By dedicating all your actions to the Lord. By accepting everything as Ishvara Prasada. By keeping God as the goal in your life. By fixing your mind constantly on God. Then it becomes Krishna's responsibility. He has given us a promise in verse number 7. I will rescue these people from the ocean of birth and death. How? By giving them knowledge. And how long must you put in this effort before he rescues you? Krishna says in the last line there, in the third line, Na Chirat. Na Chirat means without delay. Without any delay, I will rescue them. Now, when he says without delay, obviously you will ask the next question. What is the next question? How soon? I want to know without delay also means how soon. One lifetime, two lifetime, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, isn't it? So he does not give any promise. He says what? Na charat, without any delay. So that's not very fair, isn't it? Because he should give some kind of time frame, right? But why does he not want to commit to any time frame? See, very open, says without any delay, but no time frame commitment. So why no time frame commitment? It depends on how much of intense sadhana we do, how much we are prepared to put in that effort. So if you put in X number of effort, then X number of result you will get. You put Y number of effort, Y number of result. That's why he says without delay. If you put in intense effort, you will see the results also intensely also. So he says without delay, Bhavami, I become their rescuer from this ocean of birth and death. How? By giving them knowledge and endowing them with devotion also. So that is a promise he gives for the fourth level of bhaktas. So therefore, what are the necessary conditions? We don't have to worry, how will I get this knowledge? Where will the guru come from? Will I ever get this knowledge? What do you have got to do? Follow the instructions in verse number 6. Then if you need a guru, Krishna says, no problem, I will supply you a guru. Why? Because Krishna has got a whole bunch of gurus there, supermarket of gurus. Everywhere around the world he can send gurus, no problem. So there's no shortage of gurus. What is there a shortage of? There's a shortage of devotees, not shortage of gurus. So if you need guru, he will give you. You need place to study also, he will give you. Everything is provided, don't worry. Okay? So all you have to do is dedicate your actions to the Lord. Okay, now the question is, in verse number 8, so he's summarizing now this path for the level number 4 of the devotee now. The devotee at level number 4. What does he say? Adatsva. The word Adatsva in the first line. Adatsva manaha. Adatsva means fix your manaha. On what? Mai eva. On me alone. So when it says fix your mind on me alone means what? Since you cannot come to the worship of Nirguna Ishvara, you worship Saguna Ishvara. That's what he is telling you. If your mind cannot comprehend what is Nirguna Ishvara, doesn't matter. You start with Saguna Ishvara worship. Go to temple, have your Ishta Devata, be it Ganesha, be it Krishna, be it Shiva, be it Devi, doesn't matter. Fix your mind on me, he is saying. Worship me as Saguna Ishvara. Start at that level at least. Okay? Then he says, Mai buddhim niveshaya. The second quality. Buddhi, your intellect. Niveshaya means to rest in me. Now, what does it mean by rest your intellect in me? That means, he says, if you dedicate all your actions to me, I will provide you the paths to knowledge. So, what he wants you to do is, therefore, it doesn't mean that you have to wait until you purify your mind, then only you come to Jnana Yoga. He says you can start and go ahead with Jnana Yoga. And he will make the path of Jnana Yoga easier for you, if you only dedicate all your actions to me. So he says, fix your mind, your buddhi on me. Mai buddhim niveshaya. Rest your intellect on me. So you don't have to worry about the guru will come. And when you find the right opportunity, you must dedicate your time to that knowledge. So rest your buddhi or intellect on me. Put effort in the gaining knowledge. Okay? Therefore, scriptural study is very important. Not only are we to dedicate our actions to the Lord, we must also devote our time to scriptural study. Now, how long should we devote our time to scriptural study? How long should we go on? You say study, study, how long do you want? Until all your doubts are removed. You have to carry on. Whatever doubts you have can only be removed through study of the scriptures. So until you clear your ignorance and your doubts, until and unless you still have ignorance and doubts, you carry on your scriptural study. So if you cannot remove your doubts, carry on scriptural study. If you cannot remove in this lifetime, come back next time and start again all over again. Doesn't matter. Until you remove all your doubts and ignorance. So, you have to come back again, maybe for another verse. Only thing is what I ask of you, don't expect me to come back again in Gonda classes. So you have to come back, you come back. Everybody has got to go at his own pace. So you cannot remove your doubts in this Janma, come back for another Janma. So fix your intellect on me, means carry on scriptural studies. And then he says, if you follow all these instructions of mine, that means if you fix your mind on the Lord, you worship Him in the Saguna form, if you dedicate your time to studying the scriptures, he says here, Atha Urdhvam. Atha Urdhvam means hereafter. Hereafter meaning what? Once you get this knowledge, Aham Atma Asmi, when you remove all your doubts, you remove all your ignorance through this dedicated study, Atha Urdhvam means after the fall of this body, Niveshaya, you will dwell in me. Niveshaya Mahi means you will come to me. And he gives us such a strong promise when he adds in another word there, Na Shamshaya. Na Shamshaya means there is no doubt. Now this is Krishna giving us a very, very strong promise that you can attain moksha. It is possible to attain moksha if you dedicate all your actions to him, constantly worship him, devote your time to knowledge, study of the scriptures, there is no doubt that you will come to me. That's what Krishna says. So very strong assurance, a very strong promise. He has also given us a pathway how to reach him already. So all the instructions are there in verse 6, 7, and his promise is there to us in verse number 8. That is for what type of devotee? The one who is at level number 4. Right? So since we all want guarantee, so some people ask, what do I get if I come for Gita class? So I say refer to verse number 8. Krishna is giving you the guarantee card. He is telling you, if you follow his instructions, you will definitely, na shamshaya, without any doubts, you will come to me. Okay? Now, supposing you say, Krishna, this one very difficult, level 4. Fix your mind on me. Come and study the scriptures, keep you as my goal, all this very difficult. Then what will Krishna tell you? Level number 4 is very, very difficult. So what to do now? Refer to verse number 9. Come to level number 3. Okay, what is level number 3? If you find level 4 difficult, okay, start with level number 3. Level number 3 is explained in verse number 9. So the word starts with Atha. Atha means however. That means telling you, if you can't follow the earlier instructions, now I'll give you another lower level to start with. So level number 3 of bhakti is what? Chitta. Again the word chitta is there. Mind. It all comes back again to mind. Now what do you do with the mind? Chitta samadhatu mayi. Samadhatu means fix your mind. Chitta means mind. Mai on me. If you are unable to fix your mind on me, this is what Krishna is saying. However, Atha Chittam Samadhatum, if however you are unable to fix your mind on me steadily, stiram. You see the word stiram there? Constantly, steadily, you are unable to fix your mind on me because your mind is wavering here and there. Okay? So what do you do that? So you see this, when the scriptures, very interestingly, when you see the formation of the verses, in the first line you see the word Atha, in the third line you see the word Tatha. You see that? Athaha Tataha. Athaha means if you are unable to do this, Tataha, then you do this. So he's saying what? If you are unable to fix your mind on me constantly, Tataha, then what should you do? There is only one advice he can give you. Abhyasa yogena. Abhyasa means practice. The least you can do is practice, isn't it? If you cannot constantly fix your mind on the Lord, what can we do? Practice, practice and practice. How do you practice? How do you practice? If you cannot fix your mind on the Lord constantly, then how do you practice? That means what he's telling you, intensify all your worship and your prayers and your rituals. So whatever you're doing, intensify that. If you go to temple once a week, go thrice a week. If you do prayers only once a day, do it twice a day. Intensify all your prayers, all your rituals. And the best ritual that we can do, the most easiest and simplest to fix our mind on the Lord is what? Namasmara, japa. Just recite the name of the Lord, which you can do anywhere, at any time, at any place. There's no restriction. So how do I try to fix my mind on the Lord? It's difficult. What do I do? Practice abhyasa constantly. Okay, recite a chapter from the Gita, recite a particular verse, or take the name of the Lord and constantly repeat it. While you are driving, while you are cooking, whatever you are doing, you can constantly keep on repeating the names of the Lord. So that's why this japa yajna, in fact, if you recall in chapter 10, Krishna said, among all the yajnas, I am japa yajna, which is the most simplest, the most easiest. You can practice it at any time, any day. So how do we discipline our mind? Through japa yajna, through mantras. Keep on constantly practicing. Okay? So take any form of the Lord which is appealing to you, Rama form, Krishna form, Ganesha form, and there is always a mantra which is associated with a particular form. Take that mantra and just recite it, constantly recite it. You all know the Ganesha mantra, right? What is that? Vakratunda Mahakaya, just keep on repeating it. Okay? So whichever deity that you favor, take that mantra and keep on repeating. That will help you to constantly fix your mind to the Lord. Okay? And that's why also we go to the temple, we listen to the stories. Why we have all these Puranas? There's Ganesha Purana, which tells us all the stories about Ganesha, so that we feel more closer to Ganesha. There's Shiva Purana, there's Vishnu Purana, Skanda Purana, so many Puranas are there. All the stories, Ramayana, all that are there to help us to bring our mind closer to the Lord. So we remember, we sing bhajans, we remember the stories of the Lord, we do our japa, all that is abhyasa, it is practice. And in that way Krishna says in verse number 9, Mam Ichhaptum Dhananjaya, he is addressing Arjuna as Dhananjaya. He says, in that way, Ichha, seek or strive, have the desire to put into practice constantly repetition of the God's name. In that way, he says, you can attain me. Meaning you can constantly fix your, practice to fix your mind on me. So that is level number 3. But understand, it's not going to give you direct moksha. If you practice to fix your mind on me, you come to level 4. Once you come to level 4, then only you can come to level 5. And here he addresses Arjuna as Dhananjaya, which is another very interesting name for Arjuna. Dhanam means wealth or victory. Jaya means victory. So, winner of wealth. So, Lord is telling Arjuna, why is he calling him Dhananjaya? Just like you have, as a soldier, you have gone into so many battles, you have attained victory for yourself, you have attained so much of wealth. How? By defeating all your enemies, may you also, by practice of repeating God's name, also attain victory over your mind. How do we attain victory over the mind? It's through repetition. That's why you know the word, what we call this, what is a mantra? The word mantra contains the word what? Mana, which is mind. So the word mantras means that which helps you overcome the mind, that which helps you gain victory over your mind. So every time your mind is running away to some unnecessary place, chant the mantra, bring your mind back to God. So through practice, he says abhyasa. Now if you say abhyasa, practice, also difficult, level 3, then what to do? You say difficult also to chant the names of the Lord every time, difficult to practice also. Then Krishna says, refer to verse number 10. Come down to level number 2. So he says, Abhyasa Asamartha. Abhyasa Asamartha. Asamartha means if you are unable to do practice, you find that also difficult. See how gracious Lord is. You say, this I cannot do, you say, do this. This I cannot do, do this. Ultimately, you say, everything cannot do. Then also is gracious, he gives you back another life also. Come back again. So, Abhyasa, practice also, Asamartha, if you are unable to do this, then what do you do? He says, okay, now come down one level. Karma, your actions, at least if you can't even practice repeating or saying the Lord's name, you can't practice doing rituals, going to temples and prayers and all that, okay. What about the actions that you are doing? So come down one more level. Your actions, he says, karma paramo bhava. Paramo means be absorbed. Absorb, take all your actions and be absorbed in me. Now, karma means what? Karma means active life. And all of us are doing variety of actions, right? So all our actions, according to the scriptures, you can divide into two categories. Okay? Our scriptures say all our actions can fall into two categories. One action we call as nishkama karma. So the word kama, K-A-M-A, kama means desire. Nishkama means what? Devoid of desire. So nishkama karma means actions which are devoid of desire. Meaning what? What type of actions will this be? Selfless actions, meaning what? All of you may be doing these actions. What type of actions?
Obligatory.
Okay. One form of selfless nishkama karma action is the seva that we do, service to society. The dhanam that we do, or we go and serve in the old folks home, or we go to the where orphanages are, we go and do service. So that which you are serving, have that attitude that I am a servant of the Lord. I am serving His creation. That's why Swami Vivekananda said, Nara seva is Narayana seva. To serve the human beings is like serving the Lord. And same way that we also feed the animals, that is also a service to the Lord. So he says, at least if you can't repeat my name, if you can't do rituals and prayers, you can't chant mantras, never mind. At least your actions, go and do some seva. Go and do something for society. Rather than just doing selfish actions for yourself, take some time out and go and do some dhanam, go and do some seva. And dedicate those actions to me. Yes, you can say the Pancha Mahayajnas also. Our service to the Guru, service to God, service to human beings, service to animals, all these come under the Pancha Mahayajnas. So just dedicate all your actions to Lord. You don't have to pray, you don't have to go to temple, you don't have to chant mantras. At least take some of your actions and dedicate them to Lord. Do as a service to society. So that is Nishkama Karma. The second type is called Sakama Karma. Again, kama means desire. Sakama means the actions that we do with selfish desires. So those type of actions try to reduce. Nishkama karma try to increase. So sakama karma and nishkama karma. So what Krishna is saying here, when he says in verse number 9, if you are unable to practice rituals and prayers and reciting my name, he say at least dedicate mat karma paramo bhava. All your karmas, all your actions, dedicate for selfless action. And then he also says in this verse, kurvan karmani, undertake all your actions as nishkama karma. Madartam, dedicate all your actions to me. So if you are dedicating all your actions to the Lord, doing all this seva, dhanam, etc., what will be the result? You can ask, okay, so what if I do all the actions? I do so much of seva, I do dhanam, I do seva and dana, what will be the result? So here again, Krishna tells us the result. What is the result? Siddhim avapshasi. Avapshasi means you will attain. What will you attain by doing seva and dana? Siddhim, perfection. Now what do you mean by perfection? Purification of the mind. That is what you will attain. The more and more seva you do, the more and more dhanam you do, you will attain internal purification. If you do with the right attitude. So therefore, that is called level number 2. Dedicate your actions, purify your mind, and then he says go to level number 3, which is do the prayers and rituals and chant the Lord's name. And then you come to level 4 and then level 5. So he makes it easier and easier for us now. So now that is level number 2. Okay, you get a purified mind. Okay. Now supposing you say, okay, this is very nice. You know, I must go and do seva. But I got no time for seva. I got no time for dhanam. I got no time for all this nonsense. Now, it sounds very nice. Go and do seva, you get purified mind. Go and do dhanam, you get purified mind. Because I got so many, why I cannot do seva and dana? Huh? I have no time. Why I have no time? Huh? Why I have no time? Because I have too many selfish desires. So many things I want to do for myself, I want to do for my family. Where I have got time for other people? Where I've got time for dhanam and seva and all that. So I got time only for what? Myself and my family. Okay. So come to level number 1 now. Refer verse number 11. That is level number 1. So you say I have to think about happiness of my family, I have to think about my desires. I got no time for others. Krishna says, okay, you want to do all your duties and responsibilities for your family. And especially if you have so many desires, so many selfish desires, you tell the person to dedicate his time for seva, the person is not going to do it, isn't it? Who is going to do it? He's already got so many desires, so many ambitions, so many things he wants to do for himself and his family. So, to encourage that person to come and do seva is not easy. So what do you do? So Krishna says, okay, excuse me, may you be committed to what? Earlier I told you there are two types of karmas. One is nishkama karma, which is seva and dana. The other is what? Sakama karma. So Krishna says, okay, go and do sakama karma. But how to do sakama karma? Okay. So listen now in verse number 11, which is the level number 1. Okay. Now again look at the word, he says there, atha. Atha means what? If you are not able to do that which I explained in verse number 10, atha yetat api kartum. If you are unable to kartum, if you are unable to do that also, you are unable to do nishkama karma, then he says, mad yogam ashritaha. Ashrita means resort to mad yogam. Mad yogam means try to do your selfish actions, but also think of the Lord. So do selfish actions, never mind. But while doing selfish actions, also think about me. Now how? If you are unable to commit yourself to serving society, then he says do your selfish actions, take care of your family, take care of all your desires, but take refuge in me. Now how should I do that? Understand therefore that if I am serving my family, who does a family belong to? Belongs to the Lord. Okay, at least he says, think that you are serving your family, think of it as serving my family, the family of the Lord. So whatever actions you are doing, selfish actions, never mind, at least do them, but dedicate to me. Go ahead and do all the, what we call selfish actions. That's why also sometimes, you know, we are asked, we are asked to say a prayer before we eat. Now the question is also often asked, what happens if I eat meat? Is it okay? Right. You say, before you eat food, you should say a prayer, thank the Lord. And what happens if I have meat, I'm eating meat? Can I say the prayer? Can I say the prayer? Should I say or should I not say? Should say, right. But when you say, what should be the attitude? So, dedicate also that prayer to the Lord also. So, it is okay because you have desire to eat meat. At least also thank the Lord that you have given me this food to eat. At least a little bit you also have thought about the Lord, you have attached your mind to the Lord. Rather than eating the meat and not even thinking about God. So slowly as we say the prayer and eat the meat, you find that there is some purification going on also. And eventually you find that you also don't want to eat meat anymore. So at least even if you eat meat, doesn't matter, say the prayer. Right? And you will find that you will naturally start getting a distaste for meat also. So therefore, he's saying now, do all your actions, do all your selfish actions, but minimum what you should do, verse number 11, sarva karma phala tyaga. Tyaga, renounce. Renounce how? Not physically renounce your actions, mentally renounce. What? Phala, the results of sarva karma, all your actions, the results you renounce. Now, if you are doing the action, selfish action, who is going to get the result? You are going to get it, right? Because you are doing action for result only. So what does he mean by renounce all the fruits of your action? Now, the results are going to come to you. Okay? You are not going to share with others. Because why? You are a selfish person, right? You say, whatever I do is all for myself. Money I make, all for myself. Everything is for myself. I am not going to share with others. Krishna says, okay, go ahead and enjoy all your results also. But minimum, he says, what should you do? Minimum, understand one thing with that attitude, that whatever I have received is by the grace of the Lord. At least that minimum. You don't have to give dana. You don't have to go to a temple. You don't have to do any form of seva or charity. Do all your selfish action. But at least minimum have this attitude that whatever I have received, whatever I have house, I have nice car, I have nice family, I have some fame, everything has come to me by the blessings of God. Then you go ahead and lead your selfish life. Now that is why when we buy a new house, what do we do? You do prayers. Why do you do prayers? You thank the Lord for blessing you with this house. And at least minimum what do you do? Master bedroom you keep for yourself, one small room at least you give to the Lord, isn't it? For him to stay there also. So the house you bought due to your own selfish greed, right? The house you bought for yourself, for your enjoyment, for your comfort. But minimum at least what you did, you thank the Lord for giving me this house. And minimum you put one altar for him. So that's all he's telling you. That is the most basic thing that you can do. Go ahead and do all your selfish action. Do everything for yourself and your family. But understand one thing. At least thank the Lord for giving you everything. Now, so all your desires have been fulfilled with the grace of the Lord. So then he says, therefore, Tatha Kuru Yatha Atmavan. That's the last instruction he gives here. Tatha kuru yatha atmavan. Tatha, therefore, with commitment, with sincerity, kuru, may you undertake all your selfish actions with the right attitude of thanking the Lord for everything that you've got. Now, if you have that attitude, the expectation is what? If you keep on having this attitude, you see, we all start in a selfish way, right? We all, when we started our life, we always think about ourselves, think about our family. But we also do some prayers, some rituals. Then what happens? Slowly there's some understanding. Should I also not do something for charity? That realization comes to us naturally. And then we start doing some dhanam, some seva. So what happens when you follow this type of life? Slowly you will transcend your selfish desires. Slowly from level 5 you will come to level 4 and you will keep on progressing. That minimum appreciation of Lord blessing you with everything is very important, even if you are doing everything for your selfish attitude. So this is the lower stage. And supposing you can't even do that, then what do you do? Then there is no more, there's no more level already. That is the level number one. That is the most basic. For the most selfish person, at least you can't even thank the Lord for blessing you with all this, then there is no more other level to go. Right? So all the five steps are five levels of bhakti that he has given us. Level 5 up to level 1. And when we come back next week, then he is going to summarize all these 5 levels in verse number 12, which we will discuss next week. Okay? So we end with that. Yeah. What? If we cannot even start by practicing level 1, then we have to wait for some good karma to fructify. Because something we have done in the past, maybe some good karma is there. Hopefully that good karma fructifies in this life and we may meet the right person, or we might meet the sage or a saint who at least can help us to change our life. So we have to wait, if not in this birth, maybe in next birth, some good karma to fructify. Right? So that's why we have no choice. That's why he's only given us 5 levels. The most selfish level is level 1. If we can't even thank God for whatever things he has given us, then we have no choice but to wait for that right karma to fructify and awaken us. Right? Okay, so we end with the prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat.